Welcome to our program to honor the world-renowned author and historian Robert Conquest. My name is David Thoreau, and I'm the president of the Independent Institute, and we're delighted to have you joining with us tonight, and we hope that you'll thoroughly enjoy tonight's program. For those of you new to the Independent Institute, in the on the seat for each person there is a packet of information about our program. The Institute, for those of you new to our program, was founded about 6 years ago. The program was designed to pursue essentially a series of projects that would cut through what many perhaps consider a moral and intellectual poverty in public debate over public policy issues, perhaps some of which is manifested in the current presidential race. As a result, the Independent Institute is a nonprofit scholarly research and educational program. Our programs focus on completing comprehensive studies of major social, economic, environmental, and international issues. We believe that there is a pervasive and increasing politicization, not only in our daily lives in society, but also in public debate over major issues. And by that I mean that there's a very narrow focus on what kind of issues can be looked at and what kind of proposals are discussed in the public arena. And the Institute was created to try and broaden that so that perhaps a more constructive and insightful perspective could be generated. In addition to the research book, conference and media program that the Institute pursues on a regular basis, the Institute publishes a biannual review catalog called Liberty Tree, which many of you may have seen. There are copies available at the display in the reception area. But the main focus of the Institute is the production of about 6 to 10 books per year. The subject of tonight's program may be the single greatest issue that's affected mankind in the 20th century and perhaps throughout human history. The suffering that countless millions have endured under the yoke of total statism is almost incomprehensible to most of us. In making tonight's program possible, the assistance of many people, of course, was of great help. And I'd like to take this opportunity to thank many of those special people for their marvelous help. First, I would like to thank former Presidents Gerald Ford, Richard Nixon, and Ronald Reagan, as well as Prime Minister Thatcher for kindly agreeing to serve as honorary co-chairs for the evening. The dinner committee was co-chaired by three distinguished business leaders who I want to sincerely thank. First of all, Tom Clawson, who's chairman of the Executive Committee of Bank America Corporation, Gerald Gidwitz, who's chairman of Helene Curtis Industries in Chicago, and Preston Martin, who's chairman and chief executive officer of WestFed Holdings. I also want to thank the many members of the dinner committee, each of whose participation made tonight's program possible. I also want to extend a special thanks to Mr. James Fair, member of the Institute's Board of Directors, who very kindly and generously provided the wine that we're enjoying tonight. John Razian, who's director of the Hoover Institution. John was very supportive of our efforts throughout in making tonight possible. Dick Burris, Admiral James Stockdale, and Martin Anderson, also of the Hoover Institution, who were each very helpful in helping us to arrange for tonight's program. John O'Sullivan, editor of National Review, who will be speaking later this evening. Charles Wick, former director of the U.S. Information Agency. Cecilia Fabos-Becker, Janetta Sagan, Philip Siegelman, Chuck Warner, who's chairman of Bayshore Metals, and all the other people who very kindly and generously volunteer their time to help promote tonight's program. And most especially, I'd like to thank Teresa Snyder and the other staff members at the Independent Institute, who worked tirelessly in coordinating tonight's program and helped to make sure that everything ran smoothly. At this time, I would like to introduce our head table, if each would please stand when you're introduced, and please hold your applause until the end. First of all, Mr. Tom Clausen and Mrs. Peggy Clausen. Mr. John O'Sullivan. Mr. Preston Martin. And Mrs. Genevieve Martin. Professor Aaron Waldowski, who is from the University of California, Berkeley, and Mrs. Mary Waldowski. Professor Czeslaw Milosz and his wife, Mrs. Carol Milosz. Mrs. Elena Bonner. Mrs. Mary Thoreau, my wife and chairman of Garvey International. And our distinguished honoree, Dr. Robert Conquest, and his wife, Mrs. Elizabeth Conquest. Now I would like to turn the program over to the man who will actually be hosting the evening's program for us. Dr. Preston Martin has pursued a career developing and managing organizations in business, government, and academia. He currently is chairman and chief executive officer of WestFed Holdings and associated companies. Preston has founded numerous enterprises, including ones for Sears Roebuck and Company, Federal Home Loan Mortgage Corporation, and graduate schools in Italy and Pakistan. He served as vice chairman of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors from 1982 to 1986 and holds a PhD in monetary economics from Indiana University. It gives me great pleasure to present Preston Martin.
Thank you, David. Ladies and gentlemen, I was told that I should refrain from addressing the ladies because of certain legal complications which might arise from that phrase, and therefore for the men present, I cannot welcome the gentlemen, so fellas, it's nice to have you with us tonight. Seriously, your presence tonight is a recognition of the momentous historical events in Europe and Asia, the utter defeat of communism, which has literally transformed our world in just 7 years. Think of it, just 7 years since 1985. Time is the only truly scarce resource, and your presence here is a tip of the hat to a handful of scholars who contributed to worldwide awareness that the socialism in Russia and so many other countries was characterized by human horror and dictatorship, not by the proletariat, but from the nomenclatura, the bureaucrats. The evidence communicated so vibrantly by Bob Conquest and just a few others was rejected by the politically correct academics here in Europe and Japan. The Western world's politicians ignored the truth about socialism, which millions of migrants told of, and our governments continued to grant loans and credits to oppressive socialist societies, even as the Soviet Union, China, and others expanded their massive military forces to incorporate nuclear arms. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
In the end, the then Soviets and the U.S. aimed almost 40,000 missiles at each other and at the Allies on each side. Our group tonight is honored by the participation of the people who raised their voices, their pens, and their keyboards to tell the world of the horrors of communist societies, the moral, human, political, and economic disasters, and the imperatives to change these societies in the most fundamental ways. Change to human freedom, human dignity, political and economic opportunity. For those who are visitors with us tonight, your American friends extend their warmest thanks to you. Let me mention your names. Among our distinguished guests tonight, we have individuals active in the cause of human rights, whom I would like to recognize with you. I hope you've had the opportunity earlier before dinner to meet them. First, Dr. Harry Wu, a fellow at the Hoover Institution, who spent 15 years in the Lao Gais, the Chinese Gulag, for his public defense of the Hungarian Revolution of 1956. Dr. Wu is today the world's leading authority on the existing Chinese Gulag and its effects, and his filming in China is notable. We have student leaders of the Chinese Democratic Movement with us tonight, leaders who were there when the massacres by government troops at Tiananmen Square and at most principal cities in China, a fact little known. I introduce Dr. John Lee Young. I introduce Zhang Ya Lai, Li Fong, and Arthur Liu, all veterans of those bloody events. Also, we recognize Li King Lee and Wang Wu, leaders of the Chinese Democratic Movement here in our country. Further introductions are warranted. Jack Rombler, National Campaign Director for Amnesty International, is here in San Francisco. Safana Baghdadian, representing the Armenian organizations in our country. Next, a policy-oriented economist, advisor to presidents, member of the Independent Institute's board, Bill Niskanen, chairman of the Cato Institute. Like several of you I recognize here, I served in Washington when he held office. He changed the world a little, and he's still changing it. Professor Lazio Jankovic of San Jose State represents the National Federation of American Hungarians. We all know that entrepreneurship and privatization is well understood in Hungary. Next, Cecilia Fabros Becker, Americans for East Central Europe, the Coordinating Committee, a coalition of 9 organizations representing over 2 million East European Americans. Welcome, Cecilia. Next, Vytautas Šliūpas, former chairman of the Lithuanian American Community and president of the Lithuanian Archives. how thrilled we all were, Vytautas, when Lithuania stood up to Gorbachev's military and moved the Baltic states toward independence. Next, Dr. Roland Choi Lo from the Chinese community here in the Bay Area. Genevieve and I have been to China recently and observed the real thrust toward growth in Guangdong, Fujian, and other portions of China. Again, entrepreneurship today can be spelled in Chinese characters. Unfortunately, because the distances involved and the press of busy schedules, many who had wished to be with us this evening were unable to do so. But they have sent their best wishes. I have their letters on my table there. And if I may, I would like to read just a few of their names. Relax, not their whole messages. George Herbert Walker Bush wrote us. Thank you, Mr. President. Richard Milhouse Nixon gave us a note, as did Ronald Reagan. Yes, and wait a minute, one more. Dan Quayle. Murphy Brown sent her regards and her regrets. She couldn't be here taking care of the baby, you know, the imaginary baby. Well, we have the largest of the letters and containers thereof came from our distinguished Governor Pete Wilson. I think he's not here because he couldn't afford it. John Seymour, Senator John Seymour letter, he couldn't stop running. A fine note from my old colleague, George Shultz, and my guess there is that he couldn't stop golfing, if you know George. And my partner, former Treasury Secretary Bill Simon, I think has the same affliction, golfing. And others, well, all right, I see your expressions, I'll stop. But finally, before I leave you for now, I'll be back, you lucky people. On each table, you will find cards for your use in submitting questions for Dr. Conquest. Be direct. Bob can handle them. Please have them ready, though, to be picked up during the dinner time. So let's proceed with dinner. Thank you very much. None of us can forget the stirrings in Poland so early in recent history, which characterized the rise of solidarity. I can still recall my CNN reporter daughter, Margaret Lowry, and her descriptions of Lech Walesa and the movement which eventually swept much of the nomenklatura away there. She went on to Beirut, Cairo, and then the Gulf War for CNN. But Poland was to her and to all of us, I think, a truly historical development in the downfall of socialism. Our honoree this evening has tirelessly labeled for decades as an historian, a man of letters, as a poet. His subject has been the most horrendous story of the 20th century. Few can better discuss the significance of Dr. Conquest's work than our first speaker. Czesław Białoruś was born in Lithuania received his education there and in Paris. He was active in the Polish resistance during World War II. Mr. Miłosz joined that country's diplomatic corps in 1946, and in 1951, he broke with Poland's then communist government, went into exile, first in France and later in the U.S. In 1961, he became a professor of Slavic languages and literature at the University of California at Berkeley. This is the author of numerous books, including The Captive Mind, a compelling assessment of the spiritual costs of Stalinism. He was awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1980. Please join me in welcoming Mr. Czesław Miłosz. Please come forward.
Ladies and gentlemen, paying tribute to an exceptionally worthy man is to realize once more that there is no equality in the Republic of Arts and Letters. Its structure is strictly hierarchical. The first rate is not equal to the second rate. Daring is not equal to cowardice. Generosity of mind cannot be put on the same level as self-interest. Uncertainties that are obvious when we try to assess what is the first rate in art or writing constantly undermine the very notion of hierarchy. And yet, life brings again and again the confirmation of its existence. The achievement of Robert Conquest becomes most obvious when we view it together with the behavior of his contemporaries, writers as himself, whether they are English, American, French, or Italian. For many decades of the 20th century, the great majority of them observed certain rules which seemed to them so obvious that they became their second nature. To act against those rules would be to violate powerful taboos. Not that the existence of those taboos testified to open political choices. The choices were there, but not avowed. And the penalty for non-conformity was not political, but societal, as entailed a loss of status in the intellectual community. I have in mind, of course, the injunction forbidding to speak the truth about the communist system in the Soviet Union. Robert Conquest, though he is the author of several scholarly books, is a poet, and I wish him much free time to pursue his true vocation now, when he completed his task in the service of humanity by writing about the criminal nature of the Soviet state, which is no more. In the history of modern poetry, Conquest occupies a permanent place as an initiator of the so-called movement in England of the 1950s, together with Kingsley Amis, Dennis Enright, Donald Davy, Philip Larkin, and Tom Gunn. Being a poet myself and having lived in the 50s in Paris, I am able to visualize the risk assumed by a poet who would transgress against what was then considered as politically correct. At that time, Jean-Paul Sartre was leading a hideous campaign against Albert Camus, who dare to mention in his book, The Rebel, the existence of concentration camps in the Soviet Union. Robert Conquest's London must have been not very different in this respect from Paris. And even if I cannot compare my contribution to the struggle against modern forms of slavery with Robert Conquest's voluminous oeuvre, my experience is enough to comprehend the resistance he had to overcome in order to embark upon his investigations. Honesty compels me to add that several years after World War II, owing to the peculiar political situation in Poland, I practiced a compromise with my conscience. Therefore, what I say here may be interpreted also as a homage paid by sin to virtue. Perhaps certain facts recede too fast into a merciful oblivion. The attitude of the overwhelming majority of Western literati towards the communist state ranged from open adulation to silence about such facts as mass murders, mass deportations, artificial famines, and slave labor camps. Altogether, it belongs to the strangest phenomena in the history of our century and will certainly provide a subject for many analyses. A mythologized notion of progress led to equating the so-called socialism of the Soviets with the future of humanity. Among the active adulators and admirers, you find the most brilliant minds who just wanted to be deceived, to mention only Bernard Shaw, Romain Rolland, Jean-Paul Sartre, Pablo Picasso. Today, it becomes more and more obvious that the 70 years long survival of the Soviet tyranny was to a large extent dependent upon maintaining, through a gigantic machine of disinformation, a pretense of humaneness. Testimonies and reports published in the West were not heeded. I remember an eminent American journalist assuring me that the works of Abram Terz, the pseudonym of Andrei Sinyavsky, were not written in Moscow, but fabricated abroad by anti-communists. Yet the voices of Russian writers and scholars succeeded at last to reach the world at large. Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago and the outspokenness of Andrei Zakharov punctured the pretense. And that was one of the main causes of the disintegration of the empire. It was indeed, to displease President Reagan's detractors, an evil empire. The responsibility of many intellectuals in maintaining a conspiracy of indifference could not, however, justify denigration of them as a social class or caste. For in Russia, in spite of their long subservience to the regime, they started to rebel early. And the fate of Boris Pasternak may be quoted here as an example. Also in the West, the case of Solzhenitsyn and the case of Zakharov found a tremendous response and advocacy precisely among writers and artists. Robert Conquest's books follow a discipline of scholarly investigation, yet they are not detached, as detachment in dealing with misfortune of millions of human beings would be callous. The very titles clearly indicate the contents. In 1961 already appeared his Power and Policy in USSR. In 62, he published The Last Empire, which 30 years later proves to have been prophetic. And then follows the Pasternak affair, Russia after Khrushchev, the politics of ideas, religion in the USSR, the Soviet political system, the Great Terror, Stalin's Purge, a monumental work. National policy, today avenged by events, is treated beginning with The Last Empire, in The Nation Killers, the Soviet deportations of nationalities, Kolyma, the Arctic death camps, the harvest of sorrow, Soviet collectivization and the terror famine, Stalin breaker of nations. People who dared, like did Robert Conquest, to wake up the world conscience, were usually branded ultra-conservatives, cold warriors, etc. If that sort of activity was a privilege of the conservatives, they should be proud of their willingness to call a spade a spade. Yet among those members of the Republic of Art and Letters who were breaking the conspiracy of silence were representatives of a wide political spectrum, like George Orwell, Arthur Koestler, and my late friends, eminent Italian writers, Ignazio Silone and Nicola Chiaromonte. An honorable company, and including in it Robert Conquest, I say to myself that the high qualities of that group probably outweigh fallacies and aberrations so common among the intelligentsia. My presence here on this podium is due in large measure to the fact that I come from an area in Europe that was for a long time occupied by the Soviets. Whatever the future reserves for that area, and we are not free of apprehensions, the horrors of the police state are ended. I have tried to reach the public opinion in the West by writing about the plight of the country of my birth, Lithuania, and the country of my language, Poland, and of course, I was respectful of those not numerous colleagues whose works promoted the cause of liberation. At this moment, I have the opportunity to express to Robert Conquest my gratitude. Thank you.